And this ball in the air, deep right center field.
Two-run home run, Trevor Story. Way back, Myers, watch it go out. Chuck Nasty.
Two-run home run, David Dahl.
And Nolan drives this high in the air, deep left field. Take a good look, you won't see it for long.
I don't want to lose your love tonight.
Welcome into the DNVR Rockies podcast brought to you by Strava Craft Coffee. Remember to use that promo code DNVR20 and you will save 20% off your entire order of that CBD infused, deliciously rich, and potentially life altering Strava Craft Coffee. I am your host, Drew Kreisman. I am the managing editor of DNVR Rockies. Patrick Lyons will be along to join the conversation in just a few moments, and we have got to discuss, believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, there is a win for your Colorado Rockies in Los Angeles against the Dodgers. This is real life. No one needs to pinch you to wake you up. You are not dreaming. It happened. The Colorado Rockies played a top to bottom good baseball game and defeated the Los Angeles Dodgers by coming through late and then not blowing it. That's what happened. I did not make that up. Those are the facts of the case, and they are undisputed. It really was, you know, obviously not in the bag until the final out was made. No one felt comfortable. No one felt confident that the Colorado Rockies were going to win that game, but they did play a good game pretty much, as I said, top to bottom. They got the clutch hits that they needed late, including from Nolan Arenado, who, you know, I've been harping on all season. You know, I've been going back and forth with our guy Manny Randhawa about him. He still had three really ugly at-bats to start this game out, striking out in the first two. In his third at-bat, he swung at the very first pitch, which was out of the zone, and rolled it over to the shortstop, and that was in an inning where Gonsolin had already thrown only a handful of pitches. It was in middle innings. They really needed to stretch him out there. Three bad at-bats, and then I'll even say this. It's not like Nolan knocked the crap out of that one. It wasn't a super confident swing, not the type of clutch Nolan that we're used to seeing, but they count the same. They all count the same in the box score. He'll take it. I know you'll take it. The Colorado Rockies will take it. They're in the ninth inning, him coming through with the single to the right side off a sinker, or I think it was maybe a slider out away from him that he just pushed away from the shift. If there's a second baseman in a normal spot there, that's, you know, a double play, or if they've got the infield in normal, you know, pulled in range, they might be able to cut the run down at home plate, but not how they had it set up. Hit it where they ain't. That's exactly what Nolan Arenado did. Still, no one's feeling super confident. Again, like I said, you go up 3-2 in the ninth, you more or less feel like, well, that's a walk and a home run away from the Dodgers walking this thing off, which is what will happen, right? But there was still nobody out and still a chance for the Rockies to put some pressure on there. The Dodgers choosing to intentionally walk Kevin Pillar, which shows you how the best team in baseball feels about the Rockies' newest acquisition and where he's at the plate right now. You may not feel like he's a difference maker or an impact maker for the Colorado Rockies, but the Dodgers were absolutely not going to let him beat them there in that situation. Now, it did make some sense to pass on him to
go to if you assume the Rockies aren't going to pinch hit for Daniel Murphy to go left on left there. But of course, they were going to pinch hit for Daniel Murphy and go to Josh Fuentes, who may have just earned himself quite a bit more playing time for your Colorado Rockies. It's arguable that he should already have been getting more playing time. There's no question that he is the best defensive option at first base, a case that Patrick Lyons has made many, many times on this podcast. But for him to come through with a big hit on a pitch, a sinker away from him, not in the strike zone, well out of the zone, after a couple of defensive swings early in the at-bat, he fell down 0-2, looking like, man, he's either going to strike out or hit into the double play, and the Rockies are going to go into the bottom of the ninth here, clinging on to this one-run lead and potentially playing very tight baseball, if not the closer Daniel Bard, who appears to be the freest and easiest minded guy out of the bullpen pretty easily for the Rockies all year. The defense can play that much more tight in a one-run game. The managing, the who do we shift around? What do? You start outthinking yourself. But Josh Fuentes shot that sinker the other way, punched it down the right field line for a 2 RBI double. Huge, huge, huge stuff there from him to make it a 5-2 game. You really needed somebody to come up with a big moment. And now that Josh Fuentes has, you got to figure his confidence is pretty high. And I know they like him in matchups. And I know that they like exactly what you saw today. It's actually a perfect execution of their concept, which is you can bring him in against the lefty late in a matchup. And then you can leave him in because he's also a defensive upgrade late in the game. And now you're kind of killing two birds with one stone. Whereas if you say go the other way and you start Josh Fuentes all the time, and then they come in with a fireballing righty late in the game, and you think, well, maybe Daniel Murphy is the better bat option here, you're risking bringing Daniel Murphy late into a game where now he's got to play first base, right? So I can understand the argument, but that's an overcomplication, I think, at this point. I think more Josh Fuentes and less Daniel Murphy until Daniel Murphy starts playing better or Josh Fuentes starts playing worse. I think that's kind of I feel like I've more or less made the case there at that point. Noah, you're right, saying we do need Murphy to play, but we need to start Fuentes at least 3 out of 5 games. And I think that's the way you got to look at it. And if you feel like Murphy's got a really good matchup against that day's righty, get him in there as a DH. Maybe start him at first once a week instead of as the de facto thing. No problem with that, again, because you can go to Fuentes as your defensive replacement late in the game. But yeah, just more Fuentes, less Murphy. Simple math for right now. Let's keep it simple, right? Henry, you know, this is interesting, saying, you know, what's the strategy now for the Rockies to take the series against the Dodgers tomorrow? Got to be the same thing. And this is, you know, I've talked about it a lot. I disagreed loudly with Manny Randhawa about it. And you've heard me say it many, many times, that I just believe that it has to be the calling card of this team. And what we saw out there tonight was a game wherein, if not for, I believe, two lapses in focus, and I'll get back to that in a minute, Colorado Rockies would have shut out the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Los Angeles Dodgers in their house, behind extraordinary pitching performances from Herman Marquez, Almonte went. I was trying to remember who went in between him and Bart. I was like, Yency Almonte threw an extremely effective inning. He was fantastic. What else did they get out there tonight? Some great defense. Trevor Story on a couple of times. Sam Hilliard robbing Cody Bellinger of a home run. Pitching, defense, find your way into the key hit. In this case, two key hits. And I don't know if you guys have all heard this before, but the two key hits there coming late are Arnaldo Fuentes. These guys are cousins. Pretty weird, right? Pretty weird. But seriously, to have that happen, to have them come through in that way, that's got to feel really, really good for those guys. And in a weird way, maybe Fuentes coming up big is the spark that gets Nolan Arenado back to Nolan being Nolan. So now I've got to toast my Breckenridge brew right here. And I do have to toast this one, both in a cheers to the Denver Nuggets, who came up with a huge win tonight, and the Colorado Rockies, who came up with a huge win tonight. But you got to feel that those wins are in some way a spirit of the Colorado Avalanche looking down over them as their season has gone away. So I'm drinking this Avalanche Amber Ale from Breckenridge Brew in tribute to the Colorado Avalanche, whose sacrifice allowed for a couple of big wins for the other teams here in Colorado, as per my mother's theory. Remember that you can pick up Breck Brew down at the DNVR bar or out at the farmhouse. You call 303-803-1380 from noon to 8 p.m. Use that promo code DNVR because you'll save $5 off both the food and the beer. And one more person we've got to give a toast to joining us now, give his thoughts on the Colorado Rockies finally winning a baseball game in Los Angeles. Patrick Lyons, they did it.
Got it done with Josh Fuentes, huh? He's an interesting character there.
Yeah. Who could have ever believed in an undrafted?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, going into this game, at one point, Daniel Murphy, he was looking like the guy that Colorado Rockies had hoped for on August 10th. He was batting 367. Had gone 2-for-5 in the first game against Arizona and was right there with Charlie Blackmon atop the leaderboard in National League batting average. And again, appeared to be the guy the Rockies were hoping for. And whether he stuck around for the entirety of the season or he was used as a trade chip didn't matter because the Rockies were finally getting what they had invested in. Since that day, since August 11th, Daniel Murphy is batting 179 with a 217 on base percentage and is slugging 196. He's slugging 196. He's slugging less than his base percentage.
Wait. Matt, how is that possible? I'm just trying to work
it. He probably has had one double.
Yeah.
That's it.
Wow.
Now, since August
11th. He almost went yard tonight. I will say he turned on one and crushed it.
Yeah, but, and he's had good at-bats, but,
you know,
when the results aren't there and the results are this obvious, and when you've got a guy like Josh Fuentes, who in his 9 games since August 11th is actually tops on the team with a 348 batting average, 360 on base, 435 slugging percentage. Not giving you a ton of power, but again, leading the team in batting average over that span and doing what he's been doing on defense, it really doesn't seem to be, you know, much of a choice. I understand when you're a manager, you need to keep every guy believing in their value and what it is. And maybe it has to be more of a slower process. And I think right now we are in the middle of that process in a lot of ways. And I think Daniel Murphy would understand that process. My only hope is that Colorado isn't thinking too much about 2021 from the standpoint of, you know what, if we bring back Daniel Murphy next year, it's only for an additional $6 million because there's a buyout.
Yeah.
But to bring him back, it's only an additional $6 million. You can't be thinking about that right now. I understand that maybe next year, Daniel Murphy is a better option than Josh Fuentes is. But right now, it's very clearly not the case. And right now, you are that much closer to the playoffs and a deeper run in the playoffs than you are on opening day of 2021. No matter what you do in the offseason,
right,
you are that much closer right now than you will ever be on, you know, April 1st, because it's opening day and everything needs to happen.
Right.
So you got to go with that hot hand right now, and there's nobody hotter than Josh Fuentes right now. So as you said, you know, before the last break, this idea that if those two guys can work together in tandem, you know, Josh got called up from the alternate site right at the beginning of that Arizona series when we saw Arenado break out of that slump after getting the off day on Sunday in L.A., and really started coming out grooving. Fuentes was getting some starts, picking the ball out of the dirt. You just see the defense improve. That many more double plays going down. You know, I think the guys on the team also want him there too in a lot of ways. You know, Murphy's an interesting cat, and he's, you know, if you share a locker room or a dugout with him, you're going, man, this guy has so much experience. I can learn so much from him. He is a valuable, valuable guy on the team. We are so happy to have him on the team. Same thing with Matt Kemp. But when it comes to, well, who do you want on first base? You got to think most of the players in that dugout, besides
not exactly a toss-up, is it?
Yeah, they don't just want him. They want to see him succeed. They want him to go out there because they know the trials and tribulations that he's gone through. I mean, even a guy like Sam Hilliard, who was a 15th round draft pick, is like, oh my gosh, that's somewhat improbable to have done that. Fuentes, as you mentioned, never drafted at all, and none of that matters. None of that matters.
The production out of those guys against the big, and this is, you know, this
rookies.
Goes back
these guys
to
are
that
still rookies.
Question, right? That we were talking about yesterday when people were asking, you know, what do you get out of covering the Rockies, or what do you get out of being a Rockies fan? Look at what Josh Fuentes and Sam Hilliard. These guys who were never supposed to be here. They weren't supposed to make it to the big leagues. They weren't supposed to make it to double A. Like, and they're out here robbing home runs, coming up with huge clutch hits, being the difference in finally getting this monkey off the back for the Colorado Rockies against the Los Angeles Dodgers. And now suddenly, as Noah points out, they can win the series tomorrow. The Rockies are the first team this season to win a series against the Dodgers. Again, seems unlikely. They're sending the kid Castellani to the hill. You know, it could be that's an uphill battle. But again, if Castellani comes out and pitches a great game, what a story that is. Another guy you're not expecting to go out and beat the Los Angeles Dodgers. And so pretty cool to see those guys coming through in a big way for the Rockies tonight.
Castellani making his debut against the Dodgers. As well in Los Angeles, and against another 24-year-old Julio Urias, who has 5 years of experience. Sounds
already
crazy.
I know.
Two guys that are 24 years old. One of them just got his first experience now, and the other one, he was a big leaguer as a teenager. But Urias is a left-hander, so that does bode well for Fuentes getting the start and having, you know, three rookies contribute, you know, between Hilliard, Fuentes, Castellani there in that game. And, you know, you forget that because these guys have these have been some names you've heard for a little while. You know, even before Hilliard got the call up, you kind of had heard of him. Fuentes maybe even a little bit more after his MVP season in 2018, yeah. The family connection with Nolan Arenado. But still, these guys are still rookies. They're young players. It's much like with Ryan McMahon last year. It was really his first full season. Didn't have rookie eligibility, but he finally was able to bust out. And it's that same system that the Rockies have been using for some time now is slowly indoctrinating, if you will, these guys into their big league organization and taking those, you know, baby steps. And, you know, sometimes maybe you need to give them a little bit more. Give them more than they can bite off, more than they can chew, so that in the off season they know what they need to work on. Not overexpose them, but just let them know, like, hey, you know, we believe in you. You have a spot on this team. You've got those flaws, but look at what you were able to do when we gave you that additional playing time. So tomorrow's is a big game. Yeah, you can win that series. It kind of reverses everything that happened on Friday night with that heartbreaking loss so late after the Pilar Grand Slam. And now, yeah, you can do the improbable in LA after going and, or excuse me, before you go down to San Diego and maybe do the improbable down there. So it's amazing how just one game.
It'll feel less improbable if you take the series from the Dodgers. Suddenly taking a series from the Padres doesn't seem like such a big deal. Like, all of that can start to happen. And if you don't, still, if you play them close again, back to my analysis before this series even started, the Rockies needed to come out, play really good baseball against the Dodgers. That's what they've done in both games. Blip from Estevez and Hoffman, as we talked about. Really, most of that was on Estevez, as we talked about. But, yeah, while we're on the young players, I was going to change subjects a minute, but you were talking about these young guys coming through and the Rockies developing them and them finally hitting their stride. Wildly innocent. Your boy, my boy, the boy, the best bat going, Raimel Tapia, again with two hits today, again with four good at-bats today. All four of the at-bats he took were quality. He led off the game with a strikeout. If it's on three pitches, that's totally different than what he did, driving it up to eight pitches, seeing a bunch, fouling a couple off, swinging at strikes, laying off of balls. Last one, it was right on the edge. You could see he was on it, too. He knew, and he was trying to take it the other way. He was very frustrated. He struck out there, and he got the rally going that, you know, the Rockies ended up getting those runs there late off the bat of Arenado and Fuentes. It was Raimel Tapia going the other way with the base hit to get things started, using his speed to go first to third on the opposite field base hit from Trevor Story, running the bases well. That's all of, like, he played good defense out there today. Raimel Tapia is playing good baseball.
And he's confident. I think he's got that confidence there because...
Swagger. He's mucho swagger, baby.
Yeah, he's almost not trying to prove anything. He's just, look, this is what I'm doing now. I'm not trying to do too much. I'm all right with the fact that yesterday was only his first home run of the season. That caught me by surprise a little bit, but I also don't care, you know? Earlier when I was brought on here...
I have a conspiracy theory on all this.
Ooh, do tell. When I came on talking about August 11th being kind of the moment for Daniel Murphy where he started heading downhill, well, that was the start of Raimel Tapia going 3-for-4 against Arizona, then went 2-for-3 the next day. And so since August 11th, Tapia is second in batting average at .338. But more importantly, most importantly, he leads by a large margin in on-base percentage.
On base.
Dude is getting on base at a 44% clip. .435 entering tonight, and it went up. So he's at close to about 45% getting on base. And as the leadoff hitter, that's exactly what you need to do. And I think that's been the simplest approach for him, not trying to, you know, almost become like a Vladimir Guerrero type player where, hey, I'm a gangly guy that hit my way off the island, and I need to bulk up, I need to hit home runs, and I need to be dynamic, just be a ball player. And right now, he's just being a ball player. And you see the results, and you go, this is very good. It's not Vlad Guerrero, but it's very good. You don't need him to try to go out and be Vlad Guerrero, you know, which he was maybe able to do a little bit in the last season and a half where he touched on that, but then he would swing way back the other way more times than not. And you go, that we don't want that. It's not worth the trade-off. And right now he's just being himself, and man, it's really, really good.
Yeah. This is the player that he was. And I think they maybe tried to make him into something that he wasn't. And now they just let him be who he is. And it's a little different because he never drew walks like this. And he won't. Like, that'll come down. But the seeing a ton of pitches, that was normal in the minors. I really think that, this looks exactly like the ball player he was when he was going on those ridiculous stretches throughout the minor leagues. And if that's finally translating to the bigs, the exit velo and the slugging, it's never going to be there. But Rockies fans are going to start buying the jersey up and swearing up and down that they don't care what he'll become the new DJ LeMahieu, where none of the big numbers will love him, but he'll be super underrated and he'll continue to be a driving force behind an offense. You like that?
Well, what that made me think of is, okay, so when does he become a free agent? When does he go to New York?
The Yankees and start pulling a bunch of home runs into that short ass porch.
And maybe most importantly, he cuts his hair.
Oh, sir, how
do you know what I'm saying? Hey, sir, if you are a Yankee, sir, you're not allowed to have a mustache. Well, no, you're allowed to have a mustache. You can't have a beard. Sideburns are a major issue. Go back to watching The Simpsons. Yes, see, this is why. That's one of the reasons why you wouldn't be welcomed in New York.
No, they wouldn't have me. No.
With your mountain man beard, your ability to grow a Charlie Blackman-esque beard in 3 days. You would have a hard time fitting in there. But yeah, Tapia would have to get rid of those locks. So
yeah.
We don't want
Charlie had a good game tonight. He had a home run to right field.
Yeah.
Had a base hit there, got in the double. Does Kevin Pillar get a sack fly on that play? So, I was looking for an official scoring and I couldn't find if he got an RBI for it.
So I don't think he got an RBI. So what they ruled it was a sacrifice fly, getting him over to third base, which isn't always the case. You don't always get a sacrifice fly when a guy goes from second to third, because a lot of it is kind of based on the defense as well as the runner. So that doesn't always happen. So you got a sacrifice fly and then an error on Betts.
That makes sense. I buy that. That's fair. He shouldn't get an R, but still. Really heads up base running from Charlie Blackman to be going all out to score on that play. And then to see him show off the power, just his fifth home run of the season. You would think with all of the damage he's done throughout the year that he might have a more impressive home run total, but more good stuff. And really one of the better nights for the offense. Just, I felt in terms of approaches throughout the game, I think it was the third or fourth inning. They didn't get anything done, but I felt like everybody had a really good at bat. It was like Tony Walters hit one to the wall. Hilliard put together a really good at bat where he ended up striking out on a pitch that was just up that he turned and knew. It was like, I could have laid off of that for the ball four. And then maybe Tapia got a hit. I'm trying to remember. But, yeah, it was like, yeah, okay, everyone's doing what they need to do. And the approaches all night, except for from Nolan early until he came through big late, were really, really good. So the offense, especially if they can come out and put together that kind of approach tomorrow, you could see them gain a ton of confidence moving forward.
And I love the fact that, you know, Blake Treinen was sent out there for a second inning. And, you know, Arenado did well. You know, he produced a run there with that opposite field single, but now maybe Trinan's not necessarily available. He does have 18 innings so far this season, and was a guy that when the Dodgers signed him for a 1 year, $10 million deal, it was very quickly probably one of the best moves in the offseason. Obviously, he's not getting $10 million now with less games, but he's had an ERA just over one, and is a guy that has closer stuff that just was a little bit banged up last year. He's the real deal. So,
and he didn't throw bad pitches. Dodger-like what the Rockies did in the ninth inning to the Dodgers, going out both, Arenado and Fuentes went out and got good pitches. The Fuentes one wasn't even close to being a strike, not even close. He just went out there and got it. If you're the lefty in that situation, you're just going, come on, bro. Are you kidding me? Same thing with Treinen. He's going, I made my pitch. I put that one out away from him in a spot Nolan hasn't been dealing with all year. Poked it the other way.
Yeah.
So, but that's good stuff. And yeah, it is pretty crazy to see Pillar get intentionally walked already.
Yeah. And it was very funny when, you know, again, they make that call and they have to think, obviously they're going to the bench. And I was very much wondering, what Mark Pryor, the Dodgers pitching coach, was saying to Alex Wood. Josh Fuentes is you know, waiting to get into the batter's box, going, they're talking about me. They're talking about what to do against me. What is Mark Pryor saying other than, hey, did you know this guy is Nolan's cousin? All right, that's all I got. Let's go.
When you send me that text, it reminded me of this scene in The West Wing where they go out. Yeah, yeah, right, that too. But there's this great scene in the West Wing where they're going to hire this person from the opposition party, and they're talking about some of the research they've done on her, and the guy is saying, you know, so I just took a look at some of the stuff in your FBI profile, and she goes, you've seen my FBI profile? You've seen my FBI? Wait, I have an FBI profile? This is like, I just imagine Josh Fuentes going there, wait, I've got a scouting report? I wonder what's in the scouting report. You know, it's like, I wonder what they got in there, man. But yeah, ended up coming through. Big, big stuff. We have put it off long enough, Patrick. We have to, at this point, talk about our draft king of the game, brought to you, of course, by DraftKings. Got to remember to use that promo code DNVR on the app there. And it was, for this one, Herman Marquez, with another fantastic starting pitching performance. Now, he hasn't had one in a while. His last four have been from not good to brutal. But this was really, I mean, it was, in my view, two pitches away from being exquisite, elite, ace-like, you know, really dominant stuff, as it was good enough to be king of the game, because against this lineup, whenever you can go seven innings and give up only two earned runs, you've pitched a hell of a ball game. We'll talk about the two earned that he did give up there in a minute, but you got to figure this is huge for his confidence and hopefully just for his and the Rockies season moving forward.
Yeah, he was on track those first five starts, where he had four quality starts out of the first five, and even his opening day start, he was, you know, he came out in the sixth after giving up just one run against Texas, so he was phenomenal there too. So he really seemed to kind of, you know, have that confidence back in his eyes, and you see that relationship between him and Tony, and it looked fantastic. You know, he was back to being Don Germán, Marquis Del Rey, right, the king. Yeah. Marquez. Yeah. And you even saw it where he was trying. Mookie Betts was the guy all night, and he's the guy every night for the Dodgers, really. And yeah, they got Justin Turner, they got Cody Bellinger, Max Muncy, Corey Seager. You're getting sick out there hearing all these names, but Mookie Betts is always the guy that you really got to be fearful of, because he sets the table and he can also clear that table as well with one swing of the bat to lead off every single game. And they were, you know, Marquez was battling with him, and more times than not, he did not get the best of Betts. And we saw that there in the run scoring. But sixth inning, who did he get? He got Marquez there, he got Betts there.
Yeah.
His final out, and you like that pitch 95, and you say, there you go. Man, not only is this a great start, but it's something else to build on and say, remember that, Mookie, because this is not the last time that we're going to be going toe to toe.
Yeah, you jumped to the happy ending there, which I'm glad you did. That's always good. That's good. Let people know that right there was the happy ending. That is my huge critique of Marquez tonight. I didn't feel like he pitched smart to Mookie Betts at all. It wasn't about execution of the pitches. He threw good pitches, but Mookie Betts is a great hitter and he can hit good pitches, and you don't throw him a two strike fastball away the way he did in their second encounter and let him hit an easy single to right field. You don't put that thing in the zone. You can't give him a fastball in the strike zone when you're up 0-2, 1-2. He got away with it. There was one I didn't like to who was in the like eight hole for Rios.
Rios, yeah.
Yeah. He threw an 0-2 high fastball to Edwin Rios, I want to say second or third inning. That I didn't like, but you can get away with that to him. Still throw the ball in the dirt at least once. Like, your breaking ball is almost unhittable. Don't put and if you're gonna throw a high fastball, 0-2, put it above the strike zone. That's the problem with that pitch. And there was a guy on base, and Rios made contact, but he flied out to like medium deep center field, right?
Gio, Rios has a lot of power. He's 30 home runs in the minor leagues. Like, the dude is no joke. And on any other team, he very well, you know, there's 15 other teams in Major League Baseball that would probably give him the starting third baseman job.
Right.
In their franchise, yeah.
So you leave that fastball down just a little bit more, you're looking at a two-run home run to the bottom part of the Dodgers lineup early in the game that would have swung the momentum huge in their favor. I don't like that pitch. I don't like the two-strike pitches to Mookie Betts. And there in the fifth – now, I will say one thing. I think Marquez was a little bit frustrated because it was two at-bats in a row, he felt like, and was correct, that he got squeezed against the catcher. Austin Barnes. And then Barnes ended up getting on base that time for a double. It's on Marquez for throwing the pitch, but he almost got out of it. Story bails him out with a beautiful spinning throw on the play up the middle. You've got two outs, runner at third. Who's at the plate? Look at this guy. It's Mookie Betts again. And you throw a sort of a get me over slider, thinking, well, he's not, you know, he's going to be swinging in a fastball or he's going to be taken. And you just leave it up in the zone and you let him loop it in to left field again. I hate that pitch selection so much. Like, I'm just very frustrated with the approach. And then it seemed like he legitimately lost his focus for a pitch and actually piped one to Corey Seager that he's lucky that Seager didn't hit out. Through a frustration fastball right down the middle. Because, again, the pitch to Betts, it wasn't in a terrible location. It was just a bad idea. You can't throw a floating slider, pitch one or two of the at-bat, up in the zone, expecting him to get himself out. A lot of guys will, but Mookie Betts won't. So I felt like that was a lack of focus for those two pitches he threw that cost him the two runs there in the fifth, and he'd been so dialed in the rest of the night. And like you said, thank goodness he showed much more focus the next time he faced Mookie Betts and approached him the way he should have. Finally challenged him. He came at him high and tight, fastballs in off the plate, running in on his hands. If he lays off of him, let him take his walk.
And in that fifth, you know, where he kind of lost that focus, you know, Dodgers could have scored three runs because Story made that great play going up in the hole there, firing over. I think Murphy was able to dig it out of the dirt. So that was really nice to see, of course. And ultimately, you know, with Betts singling and then Seager doubling, that's three runs right there. But that doesn't go down that way. The defense, you know, helped out in a major way. And it was, you know, it's the first time in a long time we've been able to say that this has been a very much a complete win, where the offense, right, you know, did an excellent job. It was Charlie scored the first two runs, and you know, we'll exclude that and just say, look, they got it done in the end. So all right, offense, check those boxes. Even though they did strike out, you know, a ton tonight. Starting pitching was fantastic. Bullpen did what they needed to do across those final two frames. And
God Almighty, it was good.
They were clutch when they needed to be, both on pitching and offensively. So it very much was a complete game. And again, the Bud Black pushing the right buttons, going with Fuentes. I actually thought Murphy's previous at bat, I think it might have been in the sixth or seventh, I thought that was going to be an opportunity to go to Fuentes and we were going to see it. Didn't happen. And, you know, sure glad that wasn't the case, because Buddy was waiting for that right moment. And so that was a fantastic call on his part, and you know, it worked out yet again.
Before we talk about the Rockies bullpen, who are becoming much more reliable, but maybe you don't want to bet a whole lot of money on them all the time, maybe on Bard. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But if you're going to bet your money, one of the things you got to know about from our friends over at DraftKings Sportsbook right now is this extraordinary deal in football. And look, don't tune us out if you're not into football whatsoever, because you don't have to be into it all. I'm going to try to help you make a little bit of free money here. You don't have to know a thing about football. Check this out. Have you ever heard of a team losing by 100 points in a football game? You haven't.
Oh, or, Pop Warner, yes, but not in the NFL.
Not in the NFL, no. Not up here. And for week one, DraftKings is ensuring that even if Kansas City, who won the Super Bowl last year, loses by 100 points, you still cash your bet. That's right. DraftKings Sportsbook has moved the spread to Kansas City plus 101 points for all users. So even if Kansas City loses by 100, you still win big with DraftKings Sportsbook. That is a no-brainer. And on top of that amazing offer, DraftKings is giving away up to $100 million in prizes to all users who enter their free football survivor pool. All you have to do is sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook, enter their survivor pool, and you'll instantly get a share of up to $100 million in giveaways. Download that top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the promo code DNVR to take advantage of this no-brainer of an offer. That's promo code DNVR to get in on all of the action for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older. Colorado only. Other terms and conditions and restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. And if you have a gambling problem, please call 1-800-522-4700.
That's a fantastic thing they're doing, especially Kansas City at home. They open the season next Thursday, September 10th, against the Houston Texans. So that'll be a lock. But I would venture you're gonna need a taste of something a little bit before that. So my DraftKings pick of the week for tomorrow is going to be for not Jacob DeGrom to win. No, it's actually going to be the Phillies. Aaron Nola is on the bump against the Mets. Phillies are surging right now in a major way, 8-2 in their last 10, and right now they're plus 140. So you're gonna win some money there. Now, yeah. I don't think the Phillies will beat Jacob DeGrom, but they don't need to. They just need to get to that bullpen in a tie game or down one run, whatever it needs to be, and you're gonna feel good about the Phillies winning on Sunday. That's my DraftKings pick of the week.
Yeah, if Jacob DeGrom going to the mound meant that the Mets won, the Mets would be a much better baseball team over the last couple of years. We've seen very clearly there's no correlation or causation there. Sadly for him. I think that's a pretty good one. And Will reminding us that there was an NCAA game in like the 1920s that was 222-0. So got to hope that doesn't happen to the defending Super Bowl champs and then you'll be just fine. let's wrap this thing up talking about that bullpen. Patrick, I had the Dodgers broadcast on this evening. Old friend Alana Rizzo on the program doing a fantastic job. And they were comparing Yency Almonte's changeup to Zach Greinke's.
Hey, now.
He was really throwing that thing well tonight. It was darting out of the zone. He got some ugly swings out of some good hitters. I really thought the inning that he pitched there was quite dominant. He looked in control. And again, that's huge when your starter has gone seven. You do feel, especially now after what we've seen from Bard, and we're starting to get more and more confident that, okay, Daniel Bard has calm, cool heart and a 99-mile-an-hour fastball. And those are two things that are really going to help when you're closing out ball games. So you just can't be the guy that comes in and gives the Dodgers life. And Almonte pitched brilliantly.
Yeah, that's quite a compliment, especially considering Almonte only threw two changeups. On Saturday night, and you know, slider was really that pitch of his through that five times, and again, if we're breaking down the minutiae, and you're great at doing that, Drew, let me take you to some of the pitch sequencing where first pitch to Corey Seager, changeup, first pitch to Max Muncy, right.
slider,
first pitch to Cody Bellinger, forcing fastball. So again, just kind of mixing it up,
keeps you up.
Guys on his toes.
That first pitch changeup to Seager was such a coming out of the bullpen, putting a changeup right on left to a guy just on the black away from him. Where there's no way he's sitting on that pitch. There's a 0% chance Corey Seager's ready to hit that pitch. Thing of beauty. No, you're right. But yeah, the sequencing to do that, to throw a different pitch one to each guy, to throw all of them. I think they were all for strikes, right? I know the first two were. I know the changeup was, the slider was. The fastball that came in to Bellinger, yeah, went in for a strike. And that was clearly their approach against uppercutsons today, was to get into his kitchen with the fastball, and he almost got him for one. I don't know how. I don't know how with his swing on a fastball that's inside. He almost pulls that thing out and keeps it fair. I mean, he did pull it out. Just Sam Hilliard pulled it right back in.
You're referring to uppercutty Bellinger?
That's correct.
There you go. Uppercutty Bellinger.
That swing is magic, and it defies science and physics. I don't understand it. But the one hole in it is to get up into his kitchen there, and that's where Almonte came with that first pitch also. So good scouting, good execution. And you almost even wonder to what degree the game plan between him and Walters was setting that up with off-speed pitches to the first two guys so that maybe Bellinger's got it in the back of his mind that he's going to get an off-speed pitch because that's what the youngster Almonte is comfortable with. And the youngster said, gives damn what I'm comfortable with. I'm coming at you.
And that's how you have to do it. You can't be not pitching around the guys that are at the plate, but you can't let them have that advantage. You got to say, no, I'm doing my game plan. I'm in control. I'm in command. And have that confidence to go ahead and execute the way that they had talked, you know, before the game and everything that Tony Walters is putting down. You go, yeah, okay. Only is that to get at the good call, but I believe in those pitches, and you have to execute. And when you're executing, you're going to have that 11 pitch, you know, 1-2-3 in right there in the heart of the order, because you know your stuff is just that good. And we're finally seeing that now with Yency Almonte. And you say, man, he's young enough that, you know, maybe the final 2-3 years that he's in a Rockies uniform, supposing, you know, I mean, before he's a free agent, but those final 2-3 years, so in a couple years from now, maybe he's pitching the ninth inning for Colorado. His stuff is that good.
Lock him up. No, you never know. They brought back Jesus Tinoco. We haven't really talked about that at all.
Magically, yeah.
The funniest couple of transactions of the season got Jesus Tinoco back in the fold.
And Zach Roscup. So again, anybody that leaves, you're not gone forever. You can be brought back. But yeah, Tinoco is a real strange one where Miami tried to just put him through waivers and Rockies go, no, we'll take him. And he's back on the alternate site squad. And that's nice.
They did get two players for one out of that deal. And they picked up AJ Ramos.
AJ Ramos.
Random.
That's right. You know, he hasn't pitched since 2018 in the bigs, and you just got to hope that, you know, maybe he provides something, because they, you know, earlier this week, yeah, there was just nobody else, and it was like you have to call upon Ryan Rolison, and you still may need to.
Yeah.
But now you've got some guys if they can be competitive enough, and you know what, Rockies deserve the benefit of the doubt because they gave Daniel Bard a chance. They saw something there that they liked, and they were most definitely right. Got his fifth save tonight. And, you know, doesn't mean AJ Ramos is going to be that guy again. But certainly, you know, he could contribute something. You know, guy's got 99 saves under his belt. It's not bad.
No, yeah, he's had a decent career. But, yeah, I think you've got to feel pretty confident now about Daniel Bard as your closer, which is – objectively hilarious. But there it is. Like he's really bringing it, man. It's not just a good story. It's a good story. It's not just a good story. He's pitching extraordinarily well. He's pitching well enough to earn another contract out of this. That's for sure. Whether it's with the Rockies or someone else. And it may well be with the Rockies, considering they're the team that took a chance on him. And still given his age, he's not going to be looking for huge money anyway. So maybe he can stick around and be on this club when Scott Oberg, and I believe that Scott Oberg will pitch for the Colorado Rockies again, and so does Scott Oberg, by the way. That maybe you'll actually get to see those guys as a back-end tandem before it's all said and done.
I think 2 years, $10 million might get the job done. Maybe that's a little low, but maybe Rockies get a hometown discount, and again, you don't know what else he could get out there on the free market, and maybe he doesn't get there. Maybe the Rockies are able to lock him up ahead of time, or they even have a handshake deal right now in place to say 2 years, $10 million, and Bard's like, hey, that's great. I don't need to worry about free agency and continue to play for the remainder of the season to try and get that contract. this is a win-win situation right now. Two years, 10 mil, put in the box. We'll open up in the offseason, see if I'm right.
Love it. Well, they did it, Patrick. They won a game in Los Angeles. They beat the Dodgers. Absolutely unbelievable, but it was going to happen eventually. As we said on yesterday's podcast, turned out we were right. It was bound to happen eventually again.
I told you they would win a game this millennia against the Dodgers. I said it Friday night. I said it.
Totally true. Totally true. Now they got a chance to do the unthinkable, the highly improbable, but not the totally impossible, by sending on a Sunday night game, which is like offensive to me.
That's weird.
Yeah, I don't.
8 o'clock too.
Yeah.
But people are going to be off on Monday, so I think it'll still get, you know, good ratings.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. But yeah, an 8:10 Mountain Time start for the Rockies in L.A. against the Dodgers, trying to win a series there, which they haven't done in a very long time, and which nobody has done against the Dodgers in L.A. or anywhere else so far this year. As we said earlier, sending Ryan Castellani to the hill against Julio Urias. We will have all the coverage for you here on DNVR, whether you're following us on the social media at Drew Kreisman, at Patrick D. Lyons, at DNVR_Rockies, whether you're swinging by the website, thednvr.com, and checking out all of that written material, make sure to subscribe so that you get all of that stuff, plus discounts on shirts, hats, masks, all kinds of cool stuff. Beer, if you swing by the DNVR bar, you get a much larger beer if you are a member. Just all kinds of cool things that come with it. Plus, you get to say you belong to one of the coolest and most fun communities of sports fans anywhere in the world. I say that honestly. You know we absolutely love all of you out there because you are absolutely awesome. We are absolutely Patrick Lyons and Drew Kreisman. And until next time, we will see you at the ballpark.